Welcome back to In Search of Tarot, a podcast that examines, questions, and reimagines our approach to life and the cards.
Through guest interviews and in-depth discussions, we'll explore and expand the beautiful complexities of spirituality, philosophy, magic, and more.
I'm Nick.
And I'm Angie.
And we're your hosts for this fascinating ride.
Thanks for being here with us.
Hey, everybody. So today's episode is a little bit of a different episode than usual. It's actually a part two to a conversation that I got to have with Britton LaRue about a week and a half ago over on her podcast, Moon to Moon, in which Britton brought me on to talk about the margin, the concept of the margin, and talk a little bit about the Meet Me at the Margin conference that's coming up starting this Sunday. And Britton and I got deep into the web and mystery of what it is to be queer. And at a certain point, a question came up from Britton about who is invited to be part of this conference and what kind of identity needs to be claimed in order to join. And that led both of us down a fascinating kind of split track experience that after we finished recording, we talked about offline and decided that we needed to come back together and talk about it some more because the story had only kind of just begun. And Britton was kind enough to agree to come on here this time and allow us to keep kind of unspooling what it means to be queer, the experience of coming out as queer, and the importance of identity, the power of identity, and the limitations of identity. And this conversation is just really raw and vulnerable and honest and candid. And I'm really excited to share it with you because I think it adds so much nuance and depth to the conversation around what it is to be queer. So let me introduce you to Britton by way of her bio. Britton LaRue is a mystic, teacher, and author who channels the spirit and cosmic realms to conjure words that create cracks. Cracks in who we think we are and what we think this reality is. A recovering academic and a single mom, Britton is more interested in questions than in answers. She creates potent offerings anchored from her deep trust that we are fractal beings who are dreaming new worlds into being together. Britton's book, Living Astrology, will be published in early 2024. In the meantime, you can learn and unlearn with her through her podcast, Moon to Moon, on Instagram, via one of her sumptuous workbooks, through one-on-one mentorship, or from inside one of her many learning containers. And I'm just so grateful to Britton for joining me, for being willing to open up even further around these topics. And I just want to remind everyone that the Meet Me at the Margin conference does kick off this Sunday. It's been an amazing experience putting this thing together, and I'm so excited to kind of cross that finish line and launch. I will be giving some opening remarks at the start of Sunday and then turning it over to the first workshop facilitator. And it's just going to feel so good to finally be there with all of you and kick this thing off. If you are joining for the first time and have missed hearing about this conference, it's a month-long virtual conference for queer people who want to reclaim and restory their innate capacity for ambiguity, paradox, and liminality. That will run June 4th through the 28th, with workshops taking place over Zoom every Sunday and Wednesday evening of the month. And we've just announced the full conference lineup, so I want to tell you all the course titles, official course titles, and their facilitators. So we have Exploring Gender Through Snake Medicine with Elias Lallier, who some of you might remember from an earlier episode this season. Myth and Mycelium, Vegetal Gods of the Mediterranean with Sophie Strand, who's been on the podcast a couple of times. Tarot as a Tool for Non-Binary Thinking with Charlie Claire Burgess, who just guest hosted a couple of episodes ago and has also been on a previous episode. Meeting Ourselves in Napantla, an exploration of the works of Gloria Anzaldúa with Jason Perez. if you're not familiar with the work of Gloria Ansel Dua, please come to this workshop. The work of Gloria Ansel Dua has truly, truly changed my life, especially around this kind of marginal thinking and these marginal concepts. So I'm really excited about that workshop. Healing Through Narrative with Amy DiGennaro. The Birth Chart is Queer with Jonathan Coe, who has guest hosted this season and has been on a previous episode as well. Resting in Marginal Archetypes with Chanti Tocaranto Perez, who was on a previous episode. And Tactile and Spontaneous Divination with Edgar Fabian Frias, who joined us a couple of Shuffling Through Histories ago. So all of these amazing teachers, all of these amazing courses, a total of 16 hours of immersive experience, and discounts are available for members of the trans and drag communities, as well as students ages 18 to 22. And members of the In Search of Tarot Patreon community receive a code for an additional 15% off, except for the student rate, which will remain the same because we've priced it as low as we feasibly can. Captions will be enabled for all workshops, and recordings will be available to view through July 31st. So if this interests you, if you're curious to learn more, if you know that you'd like to be here for this workshop, it's going to be an amazing experience. And I want to just hold up the need for a space like this, particularly this Pride Month. I don't know about you, but I am feeling, to be honest, a lot of anxiety and fear and uncertainty around what June is going to bring in this country. And I am really excited that we will be able to create a virtual space that will be safe, and joyous and open and honest and vulnerable. You know, I know that we will move through some grief space, you know, this month, and some ecstatic space. And I just can't wait to be around a bunch of queer people and be celebrating everything that is the margin. So you can head over to manofthecards.com/meetmeatthemargin or click the link that I will place in the show notes to register. I hope to see you there. And if nothing else, I hope you enjoy this amazing conversation that I was honored and privileged to have with Britton LaRue. So I'm glad you're here, Britton, and you and I had a really amazing conversation, I guess a couple weeks ago on your podcast, that I think just really opened a lot up in both of us. And I was excited that you were open to the idea of kind of doing a part two, to keep going, because these ideas, you know, we were talking about the margin and about queerness and about really complex, multi-layered, you know, concepts, and it just didn't feel like once was enough. So we're back for part two. So thank you for being here.
It's so fun. Yes. Many moments lately of like, oh, I wish we had gotten to this good stuff when we were talking before. So I love the, I feel like the incompleteness is on theme.
Yes. Yes, totally. Totally. You know, I have come to know you through learning from you in astrology as praxis, and your knowledge of astrology, but I know that there's a lot more to you and a lot more modalities that you work in as well. So I would love to start by just kind of hearing your story, and whatever that weaves in, you know, is totally up to you, but I would love particularly to know your kind of spiritual path, or if that's even a word that you, you know, vibe with in any way, but just like kind of how you've come to work in astrology and tarot and all of these kind of healing modalities that you work in.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So it was 2017. Honestly, the election of Donald Trump kind of cracked something inside of me. I felt myself in like a primordial howl of literally like, I just kind of felt my whole system stop and realize like, I'm angry, but I don't even know why I'm angry. And, at the time I was married, and I was living in Hawaii, and, I was in a state of openness because I was in a new place. And this election happened, and I kind of went into a fuck it reset, honestly. And someone had suggested that I take these classes called intuitive healing with a woman on the island. I didn't know what that was. It really is kind of a magical thing that I landed in her living room, because basically what I started learning there was how to open up my intuition and see things about contracts with people, see things about my boundaries with other people, notice people's energy in my space. And then I studied with her for several years. Her name's Deborah Cremins. And basically, as soon as I started becoming open to this idea that I can have a relationship with the earth, I can separate my energy from other people, I can become available to see, like, what contracts do I have with this person? Like, why do I feel like I need to submit? Or why do I feel like I can't speak some part of me? Why do I feel... It just sort of unfurled, and so much more became available around truth. And within a few months, we were home in the summer back to Texas, and it was a full moon, and I looked up at the moon, and I had this really mystical experience of feeling like the moon was talking to me. And I didn't have this relationship with the moon. I was an intellectual and an academic, and that was startling and scary to me, but also something about it felt exactly right. And as I was sitting under the moon, I just realized that I needed to make a lot of changes. In astrology terms, Neptune was right on my sun, and that tends to bring in a lot of like spiritual growth for people, but also a lot of like ungroundedness around like, who am I and what is this life? Like the boundaries and the angles of what I thought my identity was began to dissolve. And I just had this sort of dissolving sense of like letting things fall away, and that I could do that. And on the day of that huge eclipse, I wasn't thinking about it in these terms then. It was right on my Saturn, that total American eclipse. I asked for a divorce. And within a couple months, I was joining like moon groups. I'd found Sarah Faith Gottesdiener's Many Moons workbooks. And my brother gave me my birth chart. And I didn't know anything about astrology. And I just sort of knew, like, yeah, I'm pretty sure that I'm going to be a tarot reader. I'm going to teach astrology. It was like, really, like, if you heard me, you probably think I was losing it.
What I loved about that story that you were just telling was that connection that you were describing with the moon, and how it mirrored my story that I shared with you about the lake, you know, speaking to me. And I don't know if this was your experience with that, but I was surprised when I opened up to conversing with like a non-human entity, how easy it was. I think I thought that I was going to take a lot of effort, and I don't mean to minimize the deepening of a relationship that can occur, but it was really, it just felt really nice to me how befriended I immediately felt by the lake, you know, when I was opening up to the lake. And it also was in a deep time of need, which, you know, is very much kind of what you're describing as well with the moon. So I don't know. I would love to hear just more about that, you know, relationship.
It felt like being seen almost for the first time. And like the image I have of this whole period has a lunar quality, because I almost feel like I see myself like on a beach almost, where like tides are rolling in and then they're rolling back out, and they're like pulling away gently what I'm now discarding. And it was just like this monthly process. I call my podcast Moon to Moon because I felt at this time like each lunar cycle that passed, the moon was helping me to like pull away what I just didn't need to hold on to anymore, like expectations, patterns, contracts, shame, confusions, while also kind of restoring me to a sense of who I am that was beyond how anyone had really seen me before.
Something I'm interested in as well about the story you told is that you had described this experience of learning that you can kind of separate from other people's energies and kind of call your energy back. But then the experience that you're describing with the moon is kind of like a melting away, you know, and that's kind of something that we talked about when I was on your podcast about how the margin for me is an invitation to come like out of form, you know, to enter into more formlessness, you know? So yeah, like talk about how you now think about form and boundary and if that's shifted for you over the years or just like how you think about all of that.
Oh, that's so interesting. It's like many things at once, because on one hand, I do feel that I just love the way it feels when I'm in my own energy space. And in that sense, I do feel a kind of form in the sense of like, there's like more of me there to be with. And it just feels so, so wonderful when I'm with myself and I'm not confused because I'm carrying a bunch of stuff that I don't, that kind of burdens me, it feels like. But it also has this porosity. I'm obsessed with this word right now because it's, I think, more fun than porousness, which is also fun. I also feel this kind of open membrane to the spirit realm and to kind of that which wants to engage with me to play and to help me expand or dilate what's possible for our bodies in these many, I think, or I like to say worlds in plural that we live in.
Yeah. Well, I think this leads us nicely, you know, into this topic of queerness, because I definitely understand everything you're saying. And I also have a lot of different feelings about it. And a lot of it came up in this conversation. So to give a little context to people that maybe didn't hear that previous conversation, you know, I came on Moon to Moon and was talking about the margin, this idea of the margin and the Meet Me at the Margin conference and about queerness in general. And a big question that kind of emerged from that is, well, who can claim queerness, you know? And that is an excellent, excellent question, you know? And I've been not able to stop thinking about it since then, you know, because for me, like what I realized after we spoke was I want everyone to claim that, because I do believe that it is fundamental. And so when you like, for me, I'm trying now to escape the Western colonial view of the self, you know, that there even is a self, you know, and I'm actually now thinking about this a lot in relation to astrology, which I'd be curious to hear, because as I've gone down this rabbit hole from our conversation and I've thought about, you know, coming out of form of self, I've started to be like, well, what does that mean for astrology? I mean, you know, are the planets actually acting on my microbiome? I mean, like there is no Nick. I mean, there is no me that the planets can act on. There are us, you know, that the planets act on. And so how does that kind of marry, you know, with that viewpoint? But, but I do think that there is something important for people that have been marginalized to be able to claim identity and find safety and acceptance where it can be really scarce to find that, you know, and there is a power to saying I'm queer and saying I'm queer inside of a queer bar, you know, or at Pride, at a Pride rally, or, you know, there's a real ecstatic sense of identity and recognition and community, you know, that can come from that. So what I think I've started to realize is that the kind of queerness that I really want to happen and that I aspire towards is a queerness that is not connected to trauma or to pain, which is very much, I think, my generation and certainly generations previous to me has been really deeply tied to queerness. And I think it's important to say right now, I just read Uganda just passed a horrendous anti-LGBT law where it's, you know, you're criminalized for being gay. It's still directly tied. Like, it's highly traumatic and dangerous to your life to be queer, you know? So yeah. So how does one hold, the thing I'm asking myself now is how do I hold space for everyone and everything to be queer while also not trying to skirt over or around the pain that has emerged in my life because I'm queer, and not feel like pain has to be like a gateway in order to claim being queer.
I long for that as well. Yeah, what was fascinating for me after our conversation was it's very palpable, I think, energetically in my voice, was there were parts of me that were like longing for you to tell me that I can come because I am queer. And you could hear me wanting to be included, but not knowing how to utter it or name it or give myself that space, right? And so there was this kind of like, I feel like there was like a sadness in some of my questions because of the longing. And what I realized in the aftermath of our conversation, I was thinking like there were really like three main points I think you were making that created this total opening in my consciousness. One of them is how you were talking about queerness and the margin as inherently paradoxical and ambiguous. Mm-hmm. And as I was, because I was hearing this voice inside saying, why don't you just say that you're queer because you are? And then this other voice was like, but I don't fit the enough of a definition. Mm-hmm. Like I don't fit inside of like a definition that will be to your point. I don't know if right now there can be stories without some pain or trauma because of the world that we're currently living in at some level, even if you have a family that is okay with it. But even some, like for so many young kids out there, there's so much out there to support you, but then there's still so much evidence that you are deeply unsupported in this world. Mm-hmm. But the third thing I was going to tell you that you said that was so meaningful to me was you were speaking about the unspeakableness of queerness. And as I was like letting that roll tape in my mind, playing it back again and again, I was feeling into like, yeah, there's some sort of unlanguageability that I felt around this in myself that I think is part of the ability to like put it away and not look at it. But in many ways, the unlanguageability can also be where there's liberation because it can't even be pinned down by language. So it all feels like you really opened something up in me from that conversation. And I'm obsessed with now being able to look back across time and feel so much compassion for the many selves that I've walked in that weren't able to hold this, you know?
Yeah. Well, thank you for all of that. And I think what you're speaking to too, like really points to the difficulty of categorization for everybody, you know, because, mm-hmm. and this is something that Jonathan Coe, you know, also spoke to on, I think it was their podcast this past, this Monday, yesterday, sort of talking about queer placements in astrology and sort of saying, you know, and this is something that has really, I've wondered about since I started learning astrology is, you know, is it that there's a planet or a sign or a configuration that points to queerness? Or is it just that if you're queer, then the whole chart is queer, you know? And also like, if we're all queer, then the chart is queer, you know, like, and the fact that you're describing this sense of, you know, well, I feel this, I feel something unspeakable, but I don't really see it, you know, projected. I mean, Jonathan also was saying this, like, I don't see myself in a lot of queer depictions either, you know, like mm-hmm. I, you know, a lot of the movies that have been available to queer people over the years, I mean, it's definitely starting to get better, but growing up, you know, it was a lot of cliches, you know, a lot of stereotypes. And I was like, well, that isn't me. But then you're kind of like, well, maybe it is me. Like, I'll kind of try to be that, you know, or it takes a long time to like settle into, you know, how you feel queer, you know? So I don't know. I would love to just hold space for you and whether you feel comfortable actually sharing this on air later or not, you know, but as a queer person, I feel able to offer you this space is how would you like to talk about your queer experience, like through your life? You know, what do you feel like you want to share or what has it been like for you, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think that for a lot of my adulthood, there was the times of my life where I had an experience with another woman, there was so much shame and secrecy around it that it was like, how do I even go into this? I can't even wrap my head around it. And all of these experiences were usually where I was in an altered state too. So that allowed me some kind of room to like not hold the thing because I could blame it on a thing. Mm-hmm. But because of like memory even being so strange around these experiences, it was almost like a way to kind of put it in a kind of blackout box of not understanding. But I really did not know who I was in an erotic way until midlife. I didn't have an orgasm until midlife. And I discovered how to have orgasms by letting myself imagine these scenarios. And that became the first evidence that I was willing to accept, because until I was able to even accept that, I couldn't have an orgasm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I'm speaking this out. I'm speaking this freely in the sense that I think there are a lot of people deeply disconnected from their erotic self. And I couldn't access it until I allowed the fact of my attractions to be there with me and let it be okay. And I don't even know what it means yet. I don't know what it's going to mean, but we're going to let this be here so that you can experience this pleasure. And then experience it every single day and like as often as you want. And isn't it amazing to just let yourself have this and not worry about what it might mean? But obviously that was extremely private, a lot of it, and in paradox with and in contradiction to my like partnerships that I would have. But over time, I've slowly shared this aspect of my fantasy, my eroticism, and some of my experiences with those people close to me to practice, like, how does this fit into self-conception, my porousness as a person? If this is here, are we all okay still? But then I was still able to not be visibly queer. And what I realized from my desire to go to meet me at the margin is like, what are the consequences of not just freely speaking this, Even if you don't, quote unquote, have to, you know?
Yeah.
And I, for me, like as a mother, the biggest consequence is that I am hiding something from my daughters, and I want them to feel my openness. I want them to feel my paradoxes. I want them to see me fully. You know, it was easy. It's easier for me. It was easier for me to tell them I'm a witch than to tell them that I'm queer. Although one certainly helped get to the next, you know, but, yeah. Utterly and completely, it is for them that, I would say that I don't want to be not just open about this anymore. Because I want my children to see me in all of my facets. So
that's beautiful. What a great mom you're being, you know, like it reminds me of, Glennon Doyle in her book talks about like, isn't it better to live the life as an exemplary, like as an example to your child rather than tell your child what they should do, you know? And so I love that, you know, and, I think for a lot of time, I think a lot of times parents give a lot of advice, but it maybe it's harder to like live the advice, you know? So I love that. And what's really interesting and what I really appreciate about this conversation is that like on my end, like, cause I know you shared that you felt like you could hear it and that it may, and that maybe I could sense that this was happening. I could not sense that this was happening. Like I could not sense that this was happening. And so I think this is such a good example of like, if you want to be seen, then you have to show yourself, not you, but anyone, you know, because when I heard the questions of who can come to this, because you had not voiced that you were queer, I heard it as I'm straight. Can I come to this? You know, like, and yes. And that's what created such a dissonance for me and was really like, well, I don't know, like, I don't want to say no, but part of me does want to say no, you know, like, because part of me, to be honest, feels angry at the straight world that they get to be centered, you know, like, and part of me wants to be just in the safety of my own community for once in my freaking life, you know, like, mm-hmm. Like even in the spiritual space, like, I feel like I have to be in cis heteronormative spaces, no matter what the space is, like spiritual or non-spiritual, a lot, you know? And so like this space that I'm making with Meet Me at the Margin really is a queer space. It is meant to be a queer space. So a huge part of me was like, well, I mean, I don't want to say no, because that doesn't feel like the essence of queerness to like create a boundary or to say that yes or no, but at the same time, like, no, like go away, you know, like,
yeah. And I could feel that. And that's when I just started to have really loud voices that were just like, just tell them you're queer. Like, if you want Nick to know.
Right.
this is so powerful. This phrase that you just said about if you want people to see who you are, you have to show them. I mean, I feel very moved by that. That is just, it's so powerful, but yet it can feel so impossible for so many people, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, and because like you're describing, I mean, how could you know, you're describing a sense of being queer that is not templated as well, you know, like, and so how can you show something that you can't even put into words or you can't template, you know, you don't know yet. You're still discovering, you know? And so I, you know, I do not think that we should have to template ourselves, you know, or define ourselves, but this is something I think about a lot with language as well, with queerness. Like, you know, on a podcast once, I can't remember what podcast it was, but they were saying, you know, well, why do we have to have all these words? Like, why do we have to label ourselves certain things? Why can't we just be, you know, more open? And I heard someone say, well, we need these words to be able to fight for ourselves and to be able to make ourselves legible. You know, like if we're at the Supreme Court trying to fight for our ability to do X, Y, or Z, we need words to defend ourselves with or to make ourselves understandable, you know? And so that's what I mean. Like when I talk to you about the margin on your podcast, that's kind of
I think that that's the game that we have to play, or the sort of contract we have to sign, that we have to know that we must language ourselves. And yet within that language is a stepping away from the margin, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that that can be why queer people struggle to be understood, because sometimes they just don't want to be understood, you know, because they don't want to be the centered narrative. They want to be other than that, you know, and more than that. But also sometimes they can't be understood because they don't even understand themselves, you know, it can't even be put into language, like who they are, you know, and it's more than words, you know, like mm-hmm. words fail, you know? So these are very paradoxical things that are delicious and challenging about like queerness, I think.
Yeah. Something that I think about here too is for a lot of folks who, like, what does it mean? What are your thoughts about not really ever knowing if someone is straight or queer and they want to attend something? Because perhaps they are not fully in this space where they are not, they're no longer dissociating and they're with it.
Right.
That maybe there's like a period of time where there's this searching and there's this longing to be in the vicinity or in the field of queerness before there's like the internal landing. And so maybe we can't really know who's straight and who's queer in queer spaces.
Right. Yeah. Of course. And actually, as you say that, I realize that anyone who is interested in this should absolutely come to this, because if you are interested and curious, then you probably are already a little queer or already a little like exploratory, you know? I think that what happened for us, like in our conversation, was that because it was a podcast conversation, it wasn't clear to me if you were asking the question sort of on behalf of like the podcast or like as yourself, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And you, mm-hmm. and for you, it felt very personal. And so you knew that you were asking the question like directly for yourself. And when you said, I want that, you literally meant like, I, Britain, want that, you know? but I was not clear if it was like, well, theoretically, if one did want that, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
Yeah. Yeah. So yes. Yes. So like, you're totally right. Like we can't know. It's not like I'm going to be like, show your gay card on like day one, you know, like there, we can't know. Like, and really what's important to me is just like that I'm putting a queer lens first, like that this is, you know, that every element of this is through that queer lens, that we are not going to be heteronormatizing like any of these ideas. And so if that's mm-hmm. not, if that's not comfortable for you, then you should not come. And also if you're going to feel the need to like push back against that, like certainly please do not come, like only yes. come to this, you know, if you are really wanting to open towards that and to be in a space that is primarily looking at it through that lens. Because someone recently posted, and I reposted it on Instagram, something that was like, you can't call your spaces like queer friendly if you're not going to use any queer language in your teachings, you know? And mm-hmm. I do see that. Like last year there was this offering that really pissed me off because it was saying that it was calling itself a masculine archetypal offering, but then it was saying that it was for all, you know, non-binary people and queer people, you know? And I was like, well, I'm not seeing any of that language on any of your graphics, on any of your descriptive copy. Like that is nowhere to be found. You're just kind of like saying that, you know? And
yes,
and they really didn't love that I was saying that, but it's true. Like it's like, you can't just kind of slap this like, you know, inclusivity label on and not change anything about your approach or anything about the way you're teaching these, you know, these ideas.
I bet that was really helpful for that person that you named that.
Perhaps.
Well, it's like decide, right?
Right. Yeah. That's mm-hmm. the thing. It's like, obviously you're allowed to do whatever you want, but like be honest about it and decide. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's space for all offerings of all kinds, but just like you have to decide like what you're doing, you know?
Yeah.
Because like so often, and this is, I know that we're coming close to time, but this is one thing I did want to kind of ask you about is I do find in astrology and tarot and all these different, you know, modalities that there is this, there is the sort of center narrative or centered mythology that most often gets regurgitated and repeated. And then there is this kind of side note, you know, or footnote that says, you know, and if you're queer, like feel free to queer this, you know, but it's like, okay, well, thank you for giving me the ability to like do all this other work and self-exploration on my own. But like, maybe we should be acknowledging that these myths themselves are very one note and one line, you know, and should we not kind of all be trying to queer things more, especially, like I said, if you are claiming to be someone that is trying to hold space for those people, then I don't know. I've always grappled with that with tarot. It's like, don't you have to kind of, you know, if tarot is about life, then don't you want to be looking at the cards in the kind of way that you want to look at your life, you know? And like, mm-hmm. doesn't it say a lot about how you view your life through how you talk about those cards, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I totally hear that. You know, I feel like to me, astrology has just always felt so multivalent. It just like has so many facets. And I guess I've just seen the myths as they are, as like a facet among a lot of holographic facets. Mm-hmm. And like, to me, they're so beyond the myths themselves. I was thinking about margin as like the space around the text, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like if the Greco-Roman or Hellenistic mythology is the text, I've way more interested in like what happens around that text that mm-hmm. feels liberating, expanding, defies what we think is plausible or possible. But I'm hearing you, and like I like being asked to feel more challenge in it. It's just for me, I've never felt super limited by them because I've never taken them super literally, mm-hmm. or actually even put a whole lot into the myths. Because I feel like my relationship to the cosmic body is just like, that's just like a place to put my foot down and then keep going.
Yeah, I think I just yearn for a starting place. I yearn for like an experience that doesn't require me to be the one to veer off course.
Mm-hmm.
Like, mm-hmm. like what would it feel like for me to just be on course from day one, to like totally vibe with the myth and the story that's being told and not have to like rewire it for myself, you know?
Yeah.
And that's really a lot of the conference too, is like, that's what this experience is really going to be, is trying to center the marginal experience.
I think that's a case where language is helping one to
right.
create a different way of looking at something. And I think it's a really cool idea to imagine starting at the margin and then like dancing on the text, or not even dancing on the text at all. I think for me, my relationship to astrology feels like so beyond the mythology, that the mythology is like not been as much what even has inspired me. Because I think that like, I'm trying to remember, I'm losing my train of thought too, but like, I feel like having like a direct connection to the cosmic body where you're talking with them and they're helping you inform you on what's possible through the language. And the language itself is trying to describe the undescribable and the numinous.
Mm-hmm.
For myself, I feel like astrology is a beautiful home for expanding all the possibilities of who you think you can be.
I mean, this is how we know we're in it because we're both losing our ability to speak, you know. Really, I mean, really, like, I feel like that's kind of something I'm starting to observe, actually, like, in Leah's class, in Living Systems, you know, that class is really trying to, you know, decolonize and really break things down. And you feel like at every turn, you're being hit by another, you know, ontology, another viewpoint. And I just watch as one by one, each of us in that class loses the ability to talk anymore, you know, and Leah is always like, what if that's it? Like, what if that's okay? Like, what if you don't have to make sense? You know, what, like, and so I'm just kind of starting to try to use that actually as a positive red flag that, like, we're here, like, we made it, we're at the margin, we're losing the ability to talk, you know?
Yeah, I really love that. I mean, the truth is that anytime I feel like I'm resisting something too much, like where the energy of resistance is coming online for me, I start feeling like I'm moving away from the energetic that really does support me, which is not to bypass and just like go straight into like the numinous, but I feel like the expansiveness of the cosmos, astrology, can like dissolve and imagine more than me, little Britain here on planet Earth, can do things with the energy of resistance. It does
make sense. And this, and Jonathan talked a lot about resistance this past weekend and astrology as praxis. The one thing that came up in that class that interested me was, in one of our charts, Venus came up in relationship to resistance. And I was like, I really love that because for me, Venus is stay. That's all Venus means to me is stay. And what is it like to stay with resistance? And that is really how I have now started to feel about the margin, is staying in a place of confusion and lack of clarity and, you know, the overwhelming sense of that. And there's a lot of resistance to that, you know, like, I don't want to not make sense. Like, I don't want to like not know what's happening, you know, or not know what I'm talking about. Like, but I think that for me right now, that feels like a really useful invitation to like, mm-hmm. to actually want resistance. And I mean, it depends on what you're meaning when you say the word, you know, resistance. But for me, it's like that, just that tension or like thickness or loss of direction, you know, lack of clarity and lack of like sense of oneself, you know, one unit self. Like, there's a lot of resistance that can come up from that.
You know, my Venus is in Pisces in the 12th house. So like hanging out in the confusion and the like the unknown and mystery is more home to me than like tweaking to like find answers. Like, I love not having answers. Mm-hmm. So resistance for me is like needing to find where to fight or like figure out what the problem is or like get to answers.
Well, that's so interesting because my Venus is in Virgo. You know,
that's right.
So I'm going to kind of think, I'm going to sit with this idea that like where Venus wants to stay in your chart, you know, like where, like Venus being a place where you're invited to stay and like what that feels like to really sit there. And if there, and I'm sure there is some resistance that arises from that in some capacity, you know, like Mars, for me, Mars is go and Venus is stay, you know? So it's like that relationship. And I have Mars and Venus conjunct. So there's like a lot of tension, you know, with that, but, amazing. Well, is there anything else that you were hoping to bring to this conversation today that we haven't said or haven't brought in?
I think I feel complete. I just, it was really fun for me to, roll through this topic again, just kind of like moving through it again from a more expanded place of, for me, being with the unconscious, like what was unconscious the last time we talked is now conscious for me. And I feel so much more at ease in my body because I feel like I'm just speaking from a truth place where I felt uneasy after a conversation and confused as to why that was. And it's because that was the signal that there was like this unconscious struggle that made me feel separate from my truth voice, you know? And it just is nice to know that you can have another conversation, right? Yeah. Conversation's not closed.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Yeah, thank you. I really appreciate you being so open and vulnerable. And you know, I felt, even though the conversation was complicated, like I felt very safe in your presence, and I hope you felt that way, you know, today as well. And it's really nice to talk about these complex things that just don't get, you know, this nuance, I think, doesn't often get discussed that we're kind of bringing in today. So I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much, Nick.
In Search of Tarot is independently written, recorded, edited, and transcribed by Nick Kepley and Angie Miller. You can follow Angie on Instagram at birdgirl_, that's BIRDGERHL_, and you can follow me, Nick, on Instagram at In Search of Tarot. Have a question or a comment? Email us at isotpod@gmail.com. We also invite you to leave us a rating and review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts.